humble, and the hand must lie vulnerably open, and the will must bow to accept whatever the giver chooses to give. Again, always and always again, Eucharisteo precedes the miracle. And you'd think I'd know that by now, but I forget. Father never forgets what I'm made of, child of dust. The wounded warrior is achingly tender with the broken ones, and he has all the patient time to gently lead those who seek, and he keeps leading me back to Eucharisteo. Is that what is happening as I learn Eucharisteo to be full of grace? I humbly give God thanks for the gifts. I practice Eucharisteo. And in that place of humble thanks, God exalts and gives more gifts and more of himself, which humbles and lays the soul down lower. And good God responds with greater gifts of grace and even more of himself. And I ride the undulating wave of grace, this lifting higher and higher in grace, this surging crest of joy, and this plunging lower and lower in humble thankfulness, only to rise yet higher in grace. And this Eucharisteo, it offers the ultimate joy ride. And I don't think I ever want to get off. Is this why the oil jars of joy never run dry, but endlessly refill? He must increase and I must decrease, not because that is burden, but so that my joy might increase with more of him. I kneel down to toss in the laundry. I set the dial to extra dirty. I stay on my knees and watch the water run into the washer, watch it splash against the circular glass of the washing machine's front door, hear its gurgling fall. Down it flows, down, always down, water runs, always looking for yet lower and lower places to flow. I watch water run, and spiritual water must flow like this, always seeking always the lowest places. And the wash tub begins to rock. I must go lower. I tell myself this, watching water run, that whenever I am parched and dry, I must go lower with the water, and I must kneel low in thanks. The river of joy flows down to the lowest places. I get up off my knees. I hang socks. Across the rack, white flags of surrender. My thoughts, they're hung up on humility and smallness and receiving all a surprising grace, and how this Eucharisteo has layers that lead deeper into the kingdom, lead deeper into my truest, fullest self, the one he intended. Children play in the basement below my domestic choreography, thunder of feet and crazy laughter. Swoop and drape, quotidian work, familiar cadence, constant as rising and setting sun, and God fills the common moments. A shatter of glass splinters the rhythm. Oh, a child screams. I wince, eyes tighten, the arteries tighten in mother distress. You did it! You pushed me right into it. I didn't do a thing. Mom! Mom! I exhale. Ugh. I take each step down the stairs slow, methodical. A climber descending deliberately because they're at the brink and the precipice is black. A day of attempting to restore domestic order has already racked up a tally of highlighters scribbled on a sleigh bed frame, a CD cracked in half, a paint stain on a bedroom carpet, and an endless drone of sibling squabbles. When I get to the bottom of the stairs, blades of glass meet me, carpet of shards in front of the stereo unit. The glass in this door is still good. A daughter swings the remaining cabinet door. I think I'm supposed to be pleased. He just broke this one. I broke? Son whips his hand to chest, throws arms in the air. I was just running after you. It was your shoulder that slammed into the cabinet. Oh, I'm wound tight. I'm pressing my molars together, compressing the jaw, pinching the hands tight. 10 minutes ago, and that theoretical exploration of a theology of joy? Well, theories and theology stillbirth, unless they can take on some skin, breathe in the polluted air of this world and make it happen. My knees are stiff, and it's jarring. How peace can shatter faster than glass. The breakneck speeds at which I can fall and refuse to bend the knees at all. Can I just be David, an evening and morning and at noon complain and murmur, mourn the mother's lament, of dependent faith that God will hear my voice. Psalms 55:16-17. Can I hold the tongue from the Israelite complaint with its ungrateful discontent and bitter accusations? Complaint that kindles God's anger? Numbers 11:1. I dare not let loose my tongue, for I know which cry is more likely. But I can't seem to hold her back, that tale of the heart, the tongue, she springs anyways. What in the world were you thinking? How many times have we said, no running? I'm spewing and it's ugly and the words are so frazzled with frustration they fray midstream. I can feel the slow smothering, the tight choking, and I can feel it in the throat rising, this moan, this baying ball. An injured animal wild, the trap mad, and this is not a David lament. But I carry these David words memorized. Grace for when I can't get the David lament right. I was so foolish and ignorant, I must have seemed like a senseless animal to you. Psalm 73:22. God holds us in the untamed moment, too. I breathe deep, look at them, I remember. Lament is a cry of belief in a good God, a God who has his ear to our hearts, a God who transfigures the ugly into beauty. Complaint is the bitter howl of unbelief in any benevolent God in this moment, a distrust in the love beat of the Father's heart. God's anger kindles hot when the essence of the complaint implies doubt in his love. Oh, and I rub my forehead and shake my head. Lament is this long learning hard like Eucharisteo. And this I know like I'm coming to know my name and full of grace. The more I learn Eucharisteo, the more I learn his love, the less likely I am to Israelite complain, and the more I genuinely lament, complaint that trusts his heart. I look into the faces of the guilty, and a son arcs his eyebrow, shrugs his shoulders nonchalant, and doesn't God himself express righteous indignation, wounded deep with his own sinning Israelite children? Didn't God's heart often break? Didn't he grieve and rage and feel rejection? I read it in the pages of Scripture, lines of his own story, the joy God owning his own grief. So I won't be Naaman, and I won't pretend I don't feel any pain. Army Chief Naaman, Naaman with the grotesque leprosy that thickens the skin numb. Numbness too can twist the body beast-like. In the end, it's the numbness that kills you. I lean against the stair wall. I will be real, and I will feel life, and I will be Naaman who bends the knee, enters the muddy waters of the emotion. True lament is the bold faith that trusts perfect love enough to feel and cry authentic. Holding my head in my hands, I ask it honest before God and children in my daily mess. Can we really expect joy all the time? I know it well after a day smattered with rowdiness and worn a bit ragged with bickering, that I may feel disappointment and the despair may flood high. But to give thanks is an action, and rejoice is a verb, and these are not mere pulsing emotions. While I may not always feel joy, God asks me to give thanks in all things because he knows that the feeling of joy begins in the action of thanksgiving. True saints know that the place where all joy comes from is far deeper than that of feelings. Joy comes from the place of the very presence of God. Joy is God, and God is joy, and joy doesn't negate all other emotions. Joy transcends all other emotions. Though my marriage tree may not bud, and though my crop of children may fail, and my work produce little yield, though there is no money in the bank and no dream left in the heart, though others may choose different ways to live their own life, till my last heaving breath, I will fight to the death for this. I will take joy. Habakkuk 3:18. I will struggle to heed this till I am no more. Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. James 1:2. And I will listen And again I will listen, and I will wrestle to put skin on it. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again. Rejoice. Philippians 4:4. I know my lip. The body howls when joy is extinguished. The face shrivels pain. The voice pitches angry cry. No man can live without joy, is what Thomas Aquinas wrote. And I confess it is true. I have known many dead waiting to die. The glass lies everywhere broken. And this isn't about this glass, but old glass. About glass to God. About glass to my life as a whole. I see right through to what I am. Only self can kill joy. I am the one doing this to me. The theology I've been turning over, it comes now clear windowpane and I can see holy vision. Joy is a flame that glimmers only in the palm of the open and humble hand. In an open and humble palm, released and surrendered to receive, light dances, flickers happy. The moment the hand is clenched tight, fingers all pointing towards self and right and demands, joy is snuffed out. Anger is the lid that suffocates joy until she lies limp and lifeless. It's a cosmic numbing notion that far eclipses this domestic moment. It speaks to the whole of my life, and the vision brands me. The demanding of my own will is the singular force that smothers out joy. Nothing else. Pride, mine, that beast that pulls on the mask of anger. This is what snaps this hand shut, crushes joy. When I would read Henry Ward Beecher's words later, I'd take it from my own story, so familiar his thoughts. Pride slays thanksgiving. A proud man is seldom a grateful man, for he never thinks he gets as much as he deserves. Dare I ask what I think I deserve? A life of material comfort, a life free of all trials, all hardship, all suffering, a life with no discomfort, no inconveniences? Are there times that a sense of entitlement, expectations, is what inflates self, detonates anger, offends God, extinguishes joy? And what do I really deserve? Thankfully, God never gives what is deserved, but instead, God graciously, passionately, offers gifts, our bodies, our time, our very lives. God does not give rights, but imparts responsibilities. Responsibilities, inviting us to respond to his love gifts. And I know, and I can feel it tight, I'm responding miserably to the gift of this moment. Oh, in fact, I'm refusing it. Proudly refusing to accept this moment. Dismissing it as no gift at all. I refuse God. I reject God. Why is this Eucharisteo always so hard? I look down at shattered glass, glass that brings memories, glass that gives me eyes to see in, and I see. I had thought joy's flame needed protecting. All these years, these angers, these hardenings, this desire to control, I had thought I had to snap the hand closed to shield joy's fragile flame from the blast. In a storm of struggles, I had tried to control the elements, clasp the fist tight so as to protect self and happiness. But palms curled into protective fists fill with darkness. I feel that sharply, even in this. And this realization in all its full emptiness. My own wild desire to protect my joy at all costs is the exact force that kills my joy. Flame needs oxygen to light. Flame needs a bit of wind. The theology's putting on skin. All light seen is light from the past, and light now old from the sun streams through the window, glints off the glass shards. Broken glass ignites in light, and here it is, the secret of joy's flame, humbly let go. Let go of trying to do, let go of trying to control, let go of my own way, let go of my own fears. Let God blow his wind, his trials, oxygen for joy's fire. Leave the hand open and be at peace. Bend the knee and be small. And let God give what God chooses to give, because he only gives love and whisper surprised thanks. This is the fuel for joy's flame. Fullness of joy is discovered only in the emptying of will. And I can empty. I can empty because counting his graces has awakened me to how he cherishes me, holds me, passionately values me. I can empty because I am full of his love. I can trust. I can let go. I hadn't known that joy meant dying. What did I think Hard Eucharisteo on the table of the Last Supper meant? But dying to self demands that I might gratefully and humbly receive the better, the only things that a good God gives, to be nothing in the flesh, and Christ might be everything in the soul, to follow after Jesus, who humbled himself and became obedient to death, Philippians 2:8, to follow Christ to the table of Eucharisteo, the table of surrender that gives thanks for what is given. This is joy. True humility is self-smallness to the point of blessed self-forgetfulness. And what could bring more happiness than emptying of self-will and being wholly immersed in the will of God for this moment? Joy, it's always obedience. I know it deeper now. This Eucharisteo is no game of Pollyanna, but the hard edge of a blade. Only self can kill joy. I take a long, deep breath. I step from the stairs, stairs that have led all the way down into this. I kneel down into a mess of glass. I have known this place. I remember the red tears and the cutting away pain. And was this careless breaking of glass really about all the cares that made me break glass long ago? This time I know healing. Eucharisteo makes the knees the vantage point of a life, and I bend, and the body, it says quiet, thy will be done. This is the way a body and a mouth say thank you. Thy will be done. This is the way the self dies, falls into the arms of love. Oh, this is why. This is why the fight for joy is always so hard. No one who ever said to God, thy will be done, and meant it in his heart, has ever failed to find joy. Not just in heaven, or even down the road in the future in this world, but in this world, at that very moment, asserts Peter Kreeft. Every other Christian who has ever lived has found exactly the same thing in his own experience. It is an experiment that has been performed over and over again, billions of times, always with the same result. I'm kneeling in glass and my memories of shattered glass, and Jesus comes soft. Thy will be done is my own joy story, child, from beginning to end. And I think of Jesus beginning his supernatural conception. His mother bends the knee and submits her will to God's. Let this happen to me as you say. Luke 1:38. This is a woman, a womb, a hand humbly opening to the perfect will of God. Jesus' mother sings over the dividing cells of his divinity. How my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. For he took notice of his lowly servant girl. He has brought down princes from their thrones and exalted the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things. Luke 1:47, 48, 52, 53. In Mary's humility, her willingness to die to her expectations and plans, God exalts her. In her submissiveness to his will, he fills her emptiness with fullness of himself. Her refrain of humble surrendered gratitude quietly sings through all ages. I think of the end of his earthly life. Jesus himself bends the knee in a garden and weeps his own song. Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done. Luke 22:42. He opens wide his mouth and accepts he will drink this cup of suffering too. Why? For the greater joy. Joy now, joy forever. Conceived in grateful humility, Jesus faces death in grateful humility. And I hear it soft too, what all his life speaks. Joy is in the acquiescing. A circle of children stand around me, watching, waiting. Long slivers of transparency blades lie before me, catching light. I humbly open my hand. Without a word, one by one, they come to the outer edges, and they kneel too. And I humbly open my hand to release my will, to receive his, to accept his wind. I accept the gift of now as it is, accept God. For I can't be receptive to God unless I receive what he gives. Joy's light flickers, breathes, fueled by the will of God, fueled by him. A shaft filters through an afternoon window, and the cracks of the aged wood revive in sun. I pray. I let go. Lay the hand open. The sun slides across old hairline scars. My palm holds light.
Chapter 10. Empty to fill. Use me then, my Savior, for whatever purposes and in whatever way you may require. Here is my poor heart, an empty vessel. Fill it with your grace. D. L. Moody. I wake to rain in October, water upon panes. Autumn comes quietly to wed the countryside. The maples all down the lane blush and silently disrobe. I make beds, smooth out sheets. In the kitchen I light a candle, and the wick bows a willing flame. A fire flickers in the hearth, slow warmth in slow time for a slow rain. On the rim of the world, edge of a cornfield gilded, I listen to rainfall shy in the roof, on the corn's rustling leaves, leaves of the dead still standing. Dead leaves of cornstalks, thousands, touch, like bows across strings, making music like water. Like running water. Fields make music with sky, with that sea come looking for dry land, and rivulets course quiet down glass. Gray clouds track low, head east. I lay breakfast bowls out on the table. Soon those children, that fine man, will come in hungry from the barn. Silver spoons, stainless steel cups, enamelware pitcher of milk, farm honey. I stand for a moment by the table, looking out a wet window to the south. One comes now, a son, with his hood pulled up against early morning rain. I watch him, love of ours, meandering up the back walk. His head is bent low, feet finding all the puddles. He's splashing through ancient water, water from the beginning that has cycled through all centuries, puddled jumped by a thousand young boys through the ages, and I wonder if the water Adam knew falls here. The clothesline strings across the back walk. Droplets reel out. A jeweled necklace, framing now. From one forgotten clothespin hangs a singular raindrop, and I see. The clothesline is the beam. The wooden clothespin is an upright post. I see a cross in the clothespin. Sun looks up, sees me at the window, and he waves, all a smile. The droplet falls from the cross clothespin. Grace upon us. And for a moment, longer, long, I blaze. This child, this time, this day, we are all here, grace, all grace, and this fountain of great grace falls all around, and it could flow through us and on into the world, and with borrowed breath I am fueled, a torch in October rains. I am blessed. I can bless. So this is happiness. I set the honey down on the table laid out, and I wave back at my son and he laughs in the rain. I'm a flame to light other flames. In the October mist, Eucharisteo opens the eyes, the heart, to the grace that falls upon us, a drop, a river, a waterfall of blessing, filling our emptiness. It falls into the open hand and makes life a paradise again. We wonder, if Eucharisteo had led us to let go and open the hand to receive all his shimmering river of gifts, how can we now close the hand? If I close these fingers, try to hold, hoard the river, dam up the grace, won't the water grow stagnant? Long the children and I once looked at photos of the dead sea, and we read how the Jordan River streams into the sea, and nothing flows out of the sea, and the salt content rises, and everything dies. I think of this, that fullness grows foul. Grace is alive, living waters. If I dam up the grace, hold the blessings tight, joy within dies. Waters that have no life. I turn my hand over, spread my fingers open. I receive grace. And through me, grace could flow on, like a cycle of water in continuous movement. Grace is meant to fall, a rain. Again, again, again. I could share the grace, multiply the joy, extend the table of the feast, enlarge the paradise of his presence. I am blessed. I can bless. A life contemplating the blessings of Christ becomes a life acting the love of Christ. I listen to the wind in the corn, rain on the pane, and I find my place. All the lost pieces are finding their place. The name I had lost back at the beginning, Anne, full of grace. Weren't these a few more of the pieces? Eucharisteo was laying bare my realest self, revealing my true birthright, the endless riches of his grace. The endless riches of his grace. I am naming grace, and I am finding my name, and over the course of months, years, I am becoming, I am returning. I am Anne full of grace, and I am blessed, and couldn't I bless, and couldn't this fullness flow on and on and on, and this could be happiness. Aren't these the long-lost pieces of name with three letters? Sky is clear. A Thursday morning, I flip pancakes and the phone rings. The youth pastor. I don't have children old enough to even be in youth group. He wonders if I'm interested in serving with our youth group for a weekend on the streets of Toronto. I remember the streets of Toronto. My first panic attack was on those streets. City that choked me tight. I was then the age of many of the kids and youth I'd be chaperoning. Could I go back? Live full on those same streets, now be full of his grace. Was this the way I might bless? And is any opportunity we are given to let the fullness of grace flow on, the opportunity we always should take? The pieces lie uncovered, ready for the taking. The call seems from God. I say yes, yes. This is my place, open-handed. Who could have known how grace would fall, and on whom? The youth group walks down Yonge Street, Toronto's main drag, towards the Yonge Street Mission, a bit of November stealing into an October night. Last of the light seeps out of the gold of the trees, and I linger behind, dig hands deeper into pockets, look for a vestige of warmth. A gray chill is creeping up the wet pavement. Cars hiss by in thickening twilight. It's going to be a long night out here. A long night doing what we've come to do, to bless Christ in the other. A night not walking wide of the crumpled hurt, not looking the other way like we normally do. Not a night about us and our agendas and getting to wherever we're going, because isn't the place we always really want to go to the place of seeing God? But I still almost miss him standing there in the shadows, a wild mane of graying hair, back to me, in front of the mission's front entrance. I'm focused on the kids, trying to ignore the cold. It's easy to forget the how of happiness, to to shift the focus and forget to let the stream flow on. And it's him, his tribe, we've come to bless, be blessed by. Before I reach the entrance of the mission, the bulk of a man steps out in front of me, walks towards our cluster of kids on the street. His buddy stays in the shadows, swigging long out of a 1-liter pop bottle. Something inside tightens fear, twists hard. Marissa and Hadassah and Erica are up ahead, kids from the country huddled together, hands drawn up into warmth of coat sleeves, waiting for staff from the Center for Student Missions to meet us, give us directions. Tyler and Dan and JD are closer to the street, checking out models of cars flashing by. I can hear Dan's voice above the others. Catch that little beamer. Sweet. Kids mingle, joke, laugh, wait. I'm a few steps behind this bulk of back and tangled hair when I see the man raise his hands to his face. He pulls down a mask. He's pulling down a mask, walking into the center of our youth group. I walk faster. From behind, I can see the man's hands wildly gesticulating. He must be saying something, but I can't make out the words. Words muffled under the mask. For a moment, he turns, and I see clearly the garish plastic of a clown's mask. Over his shoulder, I can see the uneasiness of our group standing outside the mission, Marissa's eyes, Hadassah's ashen face. My blood courses fast, and I try to remember. Trust. No matter what unfolds here, he is always good. We are always loved. Let go. I catch a phrase. Why you think I'm wearing this mask? Eh? Why? Hadassah steps back. The raspy voice yells louder, leans into these farm kids. Why would I wear a mask like this? Erica scuffs her shoe at the crack in the sidewalk. None of us know what to do with this. It's not on the itinerary. One never knows what will cost to bless. Then the man rips the mask from his face, and the blade of his howl slashes at us all stiffened to the spot here. I'm wearing the mask to mask my feelings. He shakes the painted rubber face in his hand. I'm masking the real me. Know what I mean? The heart jolts. I've never heard the whole human condition spoken so baldly and from the unexpected lips. And I want to raise a hand to my own face, see if I can peel off mine. There are words, drifting ones, but I can't hear them. Only see his wide shoulders shudder. Erica looks up. Tyler chews his lip. The night air on Young Street fills with this guttural moan. This pitched wail. It's the exposing of a naked soul. He's crying. Sobbing. I catch snatches. I'm so up and Jesus, Savior, need, know what I mean? Just so, Jesus, Lord, know what I mean? Bared, he writhes, storms past me, a flurry of tears, hair, hands. A chaperone from our group calls softly after. Jesus loves you. He stops. Half turning, he tries to steady his voice between the racking of sadness, tries to find the face that went with that voice. Yeah, he does. And he loves you too, lady. I don't know what any of this means. The wind whips at his hair. He blusters down the street. Has any grace fallen from our presence in this place? When the staff from the mission, our drivers, arrive, our group is quieted, shaken. They direct us to enter the mission, and at the door, there he is, mask still in hand. He has unfinished business. His eyes dart, desperate, driven. His buddy keeps guzzling it down. But there's more to the story, lines he's got wrong, parts we haven't understood. I study his face, I read his eyes. Eyes asking what eyes silently plead. Do you have time to really listen? The traffic whistles by. Yes, we have time. What is time for if not to bless? Hey, I'm sorry, okay? The man bellows. I've got issues, know what I mean? I'm like bipolar. His buddy spews his drink, mocking. You're not bipolar. Like graffiti, he smears the word across the coming dark. But the scoffing doesn't deter. It's us he's got to say something to. Whatever this is. Hey. I'm messed up, man. Look at me. He steps into the company of young people. Some look away. Look at me! His rage shakes us. Shakes the drowsy, shakes the slumbering, shakes us to look at what we really came to see, to look straight away into it and really open the soul wide to see. And it terrifies. His nose is crooked, busted up somewhere, healed all wrong. His mouth clings to a few brown teeth. His skin is pocked, ruddy. And his eyes look like a childhood friend's. Maybe he's my age. I'm a retard. Fried my brain on crack. Know what I mean? Got a pacemaker in here. He pounds his chest. OD just down there. He waves his hand toward a side street. Took them 5 hours to find me. Don't do crack. Know what I mean? His eyes are fiery, searching the face of these country kids. Don't get messed up like I did. Love your mom and dad because they love you. Know what I mean? He's choking back emotion. So am I. I wonder where they are, his parents. If they know he's here, like this. If they care that he's in all this strangling torture. I care. I think I do. What do you do with all this grizzled pain? What do you do to dress these oozing, gory wounds? What do you do to be a healing grace to a soul mangled in skin with a fried brain? I stuff my hands deeper in pockets, and I'm the one who feels utterly bankrupt before a homeless man, and I give all I really have. I pray. He rummages in his duffel bag, looking for something. What's he trying to do? What's he trying to do? My arms stiffen hard and the pockets don't go deep enough. The kids search each other's eyes. Nobody knows what comes next in a night. A life unscripted. He straightens. He has something in his hand. He shoves it at Erica. It's a dog-eared Bible. A Gideon Bible. Read Romans 7-8. He shakes his finger at the grubby cover. I can hardly hear over the traffic, the rumble of the city. Louder, so they hear you. Then comes Erica's voice, calmed by these words she knows and the person in them. I do not understand what I do, for what I want to do. And a low bass throbs. It's his voice. He's mumbling the words from memory. His eyes penetrating, his hand keeping beat with each word Erica reads, but what I hate, I do. It's like he's directing an orchestra with these grimy hands, the refrain of his life, beating out the words that reverberate with his brokenness. The traffic blurs by blind, and the night sets in cold, and I am stilled inside, wrapped. Freeze-framing this image in my mind, this scene on life's stage of a man whose cerebellum is scalded with fraudulent relief, but he knows the lines, the God words branded deeper, right into his core. His fingernails are so dirty. I know that nothing good lives in me, that is in my sinful nature. He slurs some of the words, stumbles. Erica reads on, and he marks each word with a swaying hand, his voice echoing hers. For I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. He's rocking his whole body to the cadence of ancient words,
does cry that his flesh weeps. He turns my way, and I look into his tearing eyes, his begging eyes. What a wretched man I am! He's torn it off like a rind. The masks. Those words say who he is, who we are. Here stands the cold, bare skin of a soul. Can I, just my eyes, hold him? I know these last lines of the chapter, for they are mine too, and I speak them with them. Who will rescue me from this body of death? Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. Grace. The mission worker speaks to him in low tones. Our group spills past and into the mission, escapes. He holds open the door. I'm the last one to trickle by. I can't walk by without looking into him. I turn and we are face to face. I feel no panic, no attack of anxiety. His eyes implore, and his gravelly voice begs. Did I get it right this time? I'm busted open. Do I do any of the good I long to do? Did I bless? Am I blessing? We are two looking into the other. All the world falls away. I know. I know. This is happiness. I speak Eucharisteo, the only words I can muster. Thank you. I say the words slowly, hope they soak into his pores. Broken man who yearns to bless. And I am him, and he is me, and behind the masks, we are all the same. All. We only find joy in the blessings that are taken, broken, and given. I nod and smile, and somewhere find the courage to say it slow again. Sure. So he knows. He is broken, and he has given. Thank you. Our eyes do hold the other. On Young Street, we enact Eucharisteo. On a Toronto street corner, he has begged for grace. The grace to be the blessing. And on a Toronto street corner, I have been more of my true name. His face, his voice, his story, they saturate me. When I open my Bible later to read of Jesus at the Last Supper, again I am with him, an untamed mane on Young Street, who took off all our masks and howled our collective cry to not just take the blessing, but be the blessing. The snow flies. The amaryllis blooms in the windowsill. Life buds tender in winter. And I read. The evening meal was being served. He got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I've set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. John 13:2-4, 12-15. Jesus is about to let flesh be broken with nail. Heart be broken with rejection, the chains be broken with bleeding love. And in his last hours before his earthly end,
He doesn't run out to buy something or catch a flight to go see something, but he wraps a towel around his waist and kneels low to take the feet of his forsakers gently in hand and wash away the grime between their toes. This is the full-bodied Eucharisteo, the Eucharisteo that touches body and soul, hands and knees and feet, a wash in grace. At the last, this is what will determine a fulfilling, meaningful life. A life that, behind all the facades, every one of us longs to live. Gratitude for the blessings that expresses itself by becoming the blessing. Eucharisteo is giving thanks for grace. But in the breaking and giving of bread, in the washing of feet, Jesus makes it clear that Eucharisteo is, yes, more. It is giving grace away. Eucharisteo is the hand that opens to receive grace, then, with thanks, breaks the bread, that moves out into the larger circle of life and washes the feet of the world with that grace. Without the breaking and giving, without the washing of feet, Eucharisteo isn't complete. The communion service is only complete in service. Communion, by necessity, always leads us into community. I hadn't fully seen it until after that night on Yonge Street. Eucharisteo means to give thanks. And give is a verb, something that we do. God calls me to do thanks, to give the thanks away. That thanksgiving might literally become thanks living. That our lives become the very blessings we have received. I am blessed. I can bless. Imagine, I could let him make me the gift. I could be the joy. I scour pots and grin silly. I can wash feet here by washing dishes. My heart can enter into communion anywhere, and anywhere my hands can enact the Eucharist. The tap water runs hot over my hands and I rinse steel. The world gleams. Christ's ministry began with his miracle of turning water into wine at the marriage feast in Cana. And at the close of his earthly ministry, Christ turns from the wine of the Last Supper back to the water for the washing of feet. Always and again, Eucharisteo precedes the miracle. This is one of his miracles, too, the taking of a life and making it a blessing. Scratching a stubborn pot furiously with a wire scrubby, I remember it again what I once read of liturgy, that liturgy has its roots in the Greek word liturgia, meaning public work or public servant. The meaning, this life of washing dishes, of domestic routine, it can be something wholly different. This life of rote work, it is itself public work, a public serving, even the scrubbing of pans. And thus, if done unto God, the mundane work can become the living liturgy of the Last Supper. I could become the blessing, live the liturgy. I rinse pots and sing it softly. This is my song of thanks to you. In the moment of singing that one line, dedicating the work as thanks to him, something, the miracle happens, and every time. When service is done unto people, the bones can grow weary, the frustration deep. Because, agrees Dorothy Sayers, whenever man is made the center of things, he becomes the storm center of trouble. The moment you think of serving people, you begin to have a notion that other people owe you something for your pains. You'll begin to bargain for reward, to angle for applause. When the laundry is for the dozen arms of children or the dozen legs, it's true. I think I'm due some appreciation. So comes a storm of trouble, and lightning strikes joy. But when Christ is at the center, when dishes, laundry work is my song of thanks to Him, joy reigns. Passionately serving Christ alone makes us the loving servant to all. When the eyes of the heart focus on God, and the hands on always washing the feet of Jesus alone, the bones, they sing joy, and the work returns to its purest state, Christeo. The work becomes worship, a liturgy of thankfulness. The work we do is only our love for Jesus in action, writes Mother Teresa. If we pray the work, if we do it to Jesus, if we do it for Jesus, if we do it with Jesus, that's what makes us content. That is what makes us content. The contented deep joy is always in the touching of Christ, in whatever skin He comes to us in. I want the contentment, the real happiness, the touching of Christ in the work, and I look for Him. We invite a young woman in an abusive relationship to come live at our place for a season. I write words that line themselves into books, and 4 times a year we give away the proceeds from those projects to Africa to supply a medical clinic, fill a stable, dig a well, more. We give the blessing of presents to elderly in nursing homes. 10 years, all 8 of us, we don't exchange Christmas gifts, but give sewing machines, chickens, coats, food, hope to those in need in our global family. We write letters, share ourselves with our sponsor children through relief organizations. I've become an advocate for Compassion International, Christian Child Development Ministry, and I campaign for the sponsorship of more children. We gather bikes and 8 of us ride and ride for refugees, raising awareness and funds for displaced families around the world. Our children laugh and pump the air with happiness that they've given more of their lives away, and I feel the smile that spreads across a life. Christian hands never clasp, and He doesn't give gifts for gain, because a gift can never stop being a gift. It's always meant to be given. In an endless cycle of grace, He gives us gifts to serve the world. This is how to make a life great. And Eucharisteo embarks us on the path. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first among you must become your slave. Matthew 20:26-27. Outside my window, the whole of creation chooses just this. The leaves of the maple tree freely unfurl oxygen. Clouds overhead grow pregnant with rain to bless. The soil of our fields offer up yield. All His created world throbs with the joy in Eucharisteo. It is more blessed to give than to receive. Acts 20:35. This is the way Jesus Himself chose. That is what the Son of Man has done. He came to serve, not be served, and then to give away His life in exchange for the many who are held hostage. Matthew 20:28. It's the astonishing truth that while I serve Christ, it is He who serves me. Jesus Christ still lives with a towel around His waist, bent in service to His people. In service to me, as I serve, that I need never serve in my own strength. Jesus Christ, who came into this world, not to be served, but to serve others, and to give His life as a ransom for many, Mark 10:45, will one day come again and put on an apron and serve them as they sit and eat, Luke 12:37. And even this very day, He faithfully serves that we might say, "The Lord is my helper," Hebrews 13:6. Every day for a month, we as a family read together Isaiah 58, and we can't get over it, and we come to know it in the marrow and the fiber. Feed the hungry and help those in trouble. Then your light will shine out from the darkness, and the darkness around you will be as bright as noon. The Lord will guide you continually, giving you water when you are dry and restoring your strength. You will be like a well-watered garden, like an ever-flowing spring. Isaiah 58:10-11. It's the fundamental, lavish, radical nature of the upside-down economy of God. Empty to fill. While the deceiver jockeys to dupe us into thinking otherwise, we who are made in the image of God, being formed into Christ's likeness, our happiness comes too, not in the having, but in the handing over. Give your life away in exchange for many lives. Give away your blessings to multiply blessings. Give away so that many might increase, and do it all for the love of God. I can bless, pour out, be broken, and given in our home and the larger world, and never fear that there won't be enough to give. Eucharisteo has taught me to trust that there is always enough God. He has no end. He calls us to serve, and it is Him who we serve, but He, very God, kneels down to serve us as we serve. The servant-hearted never serve alone. Spend the whole of your one wild and beautiful life investing in many lives, and God simply will not be outdone. God extravagantly pays back everything we give away, and exactly in the currency that is not of this world, but the one we yearn for. Joy in Him. In early spring, the trees that were losing their leaves when I drove away to Young Street now come again to bud. It rains. I drive into town, the windshield wipers rocking back and forth in the rain. I'm gathering with a women's small group at Roberta Fryer's bungalow, one with the sign, "The Thai Trio," hanging over the mailbox, home to three elderly women who spent the whole of their lives being the blessing, missionaries in Thailand. Women meet in Roberta's entrance with embraces. Nancy Martin has interceded in prayer for me for years, calls me her other daughter, and makes these honey-dripping old-fashioned donuts that are ravishing. Ann Peterson and Ann Vanton Bogart, mothers to a collective tribe of 18. Both smile, nod, and I take my place at the table, and now we are complete. The trio of Anne seeking to be full of grace. The rain is falling harder on the window panes. We circle together with Effie Strike and Mary Cook, and as a community, we take communion. I bow and pray over bread. And when I break it, I remember a body broken, and his heart torn open, and I break open. Love falls, a tear. I pass the bread. For a long while, we are stilled and deeply moved. Then quietly, I fill the basins with warm water. Circled together as a community, we give communion. We bare our toes, souls, and I bend with the sisters in Christ, dip my hands into water, and touch shy skin. We wash feet all around. We wash feet. We lap water across skin, and I hold a woman's heel, and I gently bathe. And as group facilitator, I ask each of us in the room to think about this washing of feet as symbolic of our lives on a grand scale, of how we are called to complete the communion service in service. I tilt my head to look into her face, and I ask it quiet in a quiet room, "Do you, in your day-to-day life, feel served? How might we, as a community, better serve you?" And she, mother of eight, an elder's wife, children's ministry leader, one who pours her life out in unending ways, she whispers, haltingly, through emotion, "But I'm the one who needs to ask if I've been a blessing." I hear the echo of a voice on Young Street. "But you, oh, how you've blessed." With the tepid water, I wash her toes, these beads between fingers, and I recount the long string of ways she's intimately blessed me. "The day you took me for a walk through the woods and you listened to the faint heartbeat of my faith, the countless words you've sent me, a hand of friendship." I take the cloth and wash her heel.